Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and for those of you that'd like to apply to be on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. Many of you will recognize this name, Jeff Neumeister. So he's been on the show before. We worked together. Previously, he's been in multiple Mission Matters books. So we've been bugging him to get on the line for a while now. I know he's got this new project working with CryptoTax as a managing partner there and as a partner there. Lots and lots of updates here. And for all of you out there that are, you know, in the crypto space, have wondered about it or haven't really considered what the other side of it looks like. So you've been accepting this crypto, right, as payment for services and or products. And now it's time to get into the accounting side of it. And what does that look like when it actually comes to tax time? I mean, lots of legislation, lots of changes going on. And I've been waiting to get Jeff on the show to dive into this. And also for his expertise overall on a forward-thinking approach to really running your business by the numbers. So as a forensic accountant and running the team as a managing partner over at Neumeister and Associates, Jeff brings a lot to the table here. So first off, know that was a long intro, Jeff, but man, it's just great to reconnect and have you back on the show. So great to see you today.
Likewise, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jeff. So we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So Jeff, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Jeff, what mission matters to you?
My mission is to provide value and insights to our clients and their contacts. But I do that through really cultivating an environment, a team environment, where all my colleagues, all my team members at the firm, at any organization I work at, they could provide the similar level of value and insights for our client base.
Yeah, it's great. Love bringing mission-based entrepreneurs and executives on the line to share why they do what they do, how they're doing it, and really how they're adding value to the marketplace. So great. Again, great to have you back on the show. So I don't want to assume that all of our new listeners caught maybe some of our previous work together. So let's just start with maybe your background. So tell us a little bit more about how you got started as an entrepreneur and in this space.
Sure. I'm a CPA. Been in the public accounting space for over a couple decades now. When I started the firm Neumeister and Associates about 5 years ago, opened it up as a full service practice. So we do all the traditional things, bookkeeping, payroll, tax compliance, but we specialize in some more unique and complex areas like cryptocurrencies, like M&A advisory services, forensic accounting, and fractional CFO work.
Yeah. And I don't want to also assume, I want to dig into a couple of these because not everybody has kind of gone down this path, but explain a little bit more about what that fractional CFO model looks like. Like, tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. I think most folks are familiar with what a CFO, chief financial officer, is, and it could be integral for any organization, especially larger and growing organizations. But it's an expensive resource to have, right? How many startups, how many even some like smaller to mid-sized companies, does it make sense for them to pay $250,000, $300,000 for a full-time CFO? Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't. And realistically, they may only need a few hours a week, a few hours a month of that kind of level of expertise. Mm-hmm. So fractional CFO work is essentially you engage someone like us, myself, at our firm, and we can provide that resource on just an as needed basis without being committed to, you know, a substantial annual salary.
So just to clarify and make that distinction, so it's not your fractional CFO. It's not, I mean, this could be part of it, but it's not necessarily just like your in-house bookkeeper. Like, there's a higher level of strategy, and it's not necessarily saying that maybe even an in-house bookkeeper has to be replaced. Maybe not, but like going to the strategy component of it, because it was a newer concept to kind of wrap my head around. I mean, it made sense. It was logical, but like the benefits of having that other layer, like, can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is a higher level perspective. It's CFO work is not synonymous with bookkeeping. It's not synonymous with tax prep. It's not synonymous even with accounting. Right. It kind of blends together all these different perspectives. as well as finance to be able to provide some insights about how the business is operating from a strategic standpoint. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're looking at raising some funds, what kind of funds should be raised? Should we go the angel route? Should we go with another seed investor? Should we go with VCs? Mm-hmm. Should we try to cultivate, you know, generate enough cash flows that could be self-financed, right? Mm-hmm. Those kind of decisions, things that are maybe built upon the bookkeeping, accounting, and tax work, but it's not actual bookkeeping, accounting, and tax work.
And so taking that concept a little bit further. So my preference, and I'll just kind of say my bias, I love the fractional model specifically for things like, of course, the CFO side of things, even sometimes for the marketing, depending on the side. So there's a lot of fractional type director of marketing roles out there in positions. And what I find is whether it's on the creative side or in this case, you know, the financial, I'll say creative side of things, and the real like high level strategy and things like that. Sometimes I feel like there's even a benefit over that versus having that one particular CFO, depending on the CFO, of course. But from the standpoint of when you're working with a company that's working with many companies and many different models, then sometimes you get to benefit from that learning that goes on, or even from the general like market and also learning experiences on strategy and other things from other industries or markets, or even just cycles that these companies have been through. Am I off on that? Like that spread of knowledge, does that work as on the CFO side of things as well?
No, absolutely. You're spot on, Adam. That's another kind of value add in utilizing a fractional CFO versus having someone that's in-house. Because when you're in-house, you're kind of in a vacuum, right? You day in, day out, 40 hours a week or 80 hours a week for us entrepreneurs. It's focused on just one business, right? Mm-hmm. One perspective, one industry. If you're working with somebody that works with a lot of businesses, a lot of industries, you're right. They will probably have other insights that are not going to be available when you're in a vacuum, right? And that they definitely benefit from that. And if we're working with a few dozen clients providing CFO work, and there's a situation that happens with one of them, or help them get financing for something, I could transfer that knowledge or that experience to what we provide with our other clients doing similar CFO work.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it makes total sense. I know definitely on the marketing side it works. So on the CFO side, it sounds like that same fractional model is just a home run. Yeah. So in addition to this, I understand that you're active in academia as well. So, I mean, I don't know how you find time to do all this stuff, but and I think since our last time you were on the show, or maybe it was the last thing we published, I mean, you've had some movement there, some advancement in that side of your career as well, correct?
Right. Yeah. I've been in the academic space for, you know, about almost 10 years now.
Wow.
Start off as an adjunct professor in accounting topics, and then was chair of an accounting program at a local university, Woodbury University, mm-hmm. over in Burbank for a couple of years. And now I stepped away from the chair position, but I continue to work as an adjunct faculty, teaching mostly MBA students.
Man, that's like I said, I don't know how. Well, now I know where the 80 hours a week comes from. And so let's dig in a little bit further into the topic. So this idea of really a forward-thinking approach to running a business by the numbers. So I know a lot of entrepreneurs out there, varying levels of, you know, businesses. Some are just starting out, some are a little bit further along, some are more mature. Like, what does that mean to have an approach of running your business by the numbers?
It means really just making informed decisions that consider the facts of what's going on in the operations, namely the financials. I mean, every business is, one of the functions is to generate a profit, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's all related to numbers, your operational capacity, your revenues, your expenses, your assets, your liabilities. Mm-hmm. But despite that being such a foundational piece of running a for-profit business, a lot of times business owners, they really don't have a good sense of how they're doing, of what's going on. They might know that there's cash in the bank and they can pay their mortgage and that's it. Right. And sadly enough, that's the reality, the stopping point for a lot of business owners. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we try to educate our clients on is to understand their financials, right? Mm-hmm. Understand when they make a decision, what is the impact in the financials, and to be able to decipher their own financial statements and general ledgers so they can make more informed decisions rather than just kind of winging it.
Mm-hmm. What are some, and I know this is going to vary, by the way, from client to client, but I know certain themes tend to arise with, you know, the more clients you work with over time, right? What are some of those common like opportunity areas, or once you start digging in there, doing what you do and your team does as forensic accountants and just really getting into the weeds on the numbers and otherwise, what are some of those common like opportunity areas that you're like, oh, we can help, like, this is one thing we got to fix. This is another thing. Okay, we need to start looking at this. Like, what are some of those common ones?
There's a few that only pop out. One is entity structure. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misnomers out there about how to best set up a business. Mm-hmm. For example, folks think, oh, I should do a C corp out of Delaware, right? Yeah. But there would be a single owner entity. They don't plan on ever bringing in outside investors, mm-hmm. venture capitalists, international investors. It doesn't make any sense, and they shouldn't even be a C corp. Or the assumption that if you form an entity in another state, that somehow that in that state is not have a state income tax, that they won't pay tax. Because most entities are passed through, meaning any income tax is attributed to the owners, not where the entity was formed. Right. So, I mean, it probably happens a dozen times a year where we have a new client that formed an entity out of state thinking just that. And really what happens is now we have to do a foreign registration here in California, assuming they're California residents. And now you have to file in both places, right? If anything, you just cost yourself more money. Right? Mm. That happens a lot. Another one is holding off on addressing the bookkeeping, you know, putting it as, you know, something that's not really necessary. I want to build up the business and then I'll address it later on. And that's fine, but with the caveat that that's almost always going to be more expensive than addressing that kind of stuff on the front end. We had a client about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, is a startup, and they're in operation for about 5 years. Never filed a single tax return, didn't have a single piece of bookkeeping records, didn't have a business bank account. But we're talking about several hundreds, thousands of dollars of revenues and expenses passing through every year. And it was all on the personal accounts. It was an absolute mess. And they thought they were saving themselves money, but in hindsight, it was a lot more expensive cleaning it up after such a long period of time.
Mm. And so for those that are kind of thinking about that next step in their business, and those are great examples, by the way, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are thinking, yeah, that's me. Like, that's why I like bringing up these stories. It's like, you know, so people can self-identify and relate to this and to know that they're not the only person, like, and that there is hope on the other side. I want to maybe just fast forward a bit. What can it look like when that entrepreneur, for example, the one that you mentioned or any of them, once they do have command over the numbers, like there's light at the other side of the tunnel, like what is that empowerment of understanding the numbers and their business? Like what are some of the like outcomes that you've seen or that are then possible on the other side of getting everything cleaned up, so to speak?
I think one is things are caught up and they have real time, meaningful financial information to look at. Then we can start having some more of the exciting conversations about, okay, well, what are some of the opportunities here? One common one that bubbles the surface is, you know, possibly implementing some sort of retirement plan underneath the umbrella of the entity, right? That's eligible not for just their employees, but also it gives a mechanism for the owner or owners to put it away a little bit more than they would have otherwise, right? Another thing would be one of the more exciting things for some of our clients would be is that start having some exit planning talks. Because usually you're not going to really have a meaningful exit opportunity without some really solid financial information, right? If you go to market, we see this occasionally, the client goes to market, and they're not ready. In other words, their books and records are not up to speed. Their tax compliance is not where it should be. They're not going to get as much of an offer than they would have, right? So instead of maybe a 5 or 6 multiple, they're looking at maybe a 3 or 4, which depending on the business size, we could be talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even millions of dollars left on the table because the business is not clean as it should be on the financial side.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And it also seems like, I feel like as business owners and as entrepreneurs, sometimes you're so like in the business and you don't like, and you're just, you know, going, increasing sales, launching new products, testing, right? That it seems like once you have better control of the numbers and you can take a step back, then you also can decide maybe where to focus more attention versus somewhere else, where you sometimes you probably are looking at and you're like, you thought one thing was happening, but then you look at the numbers and you're like, wait a minute, we're spending all that time over here when where we actually make our money is over there. So it seems like just the use of resources, like it just changes.
That's a good point, right? Because again, big picture, they might be thinking, okay, well, we could pay all of our bills and I could pay my bills. We're okay. Without really understanding that, you know, they might have some areas of their business that are very profitable and some that are absolutely just burning cash and they have no idea. Overall, they're doing okay. But if they have that information, right, that data is up to speed, they can make an informed decision that like, okay, maybe it makes sense to divert those resources from the areas that are losing money to the ones that are doing really well.
Yeah, because there's only so much time and attention. As an entrepreneur, we all, you know, have ideas and want to test and do things, but I can see that being an end result for some individuals, depending again on the situation. How long, and I know this is going to vary greatly, but I do like to kind of think time-wise. Now, obviously, if you're going back and fixing 5 years of books and creating everything from scratch, that's going to be different than somebody else that had a certain level of sophistication on it in the first place. But like, if there's a range, how long does it take to kind of go through some of the cleanup for some of, you know, these small business owners?
For a lot of small businesses, people are looking at, I'm just thinking of a common.
Yeah.
Common.
And I know that's, I don't want that to be an unfair question because I know you work with big companies, you work with sometimes startups. And so that's going to vary on how the founder, how long they've been in business, but just in your experience, because what I like to have people know is I just try to be that person that says at the end of the road, like there's something good and like start the process.
No, understood. So if I kind of keep it operating just off of memory here, if we keep it to say businesses that are on the small end, so less than 2 million gross or so, each year of cleanup, you know, I'd say be on the low end, 5-6 grand on the high end.
Oh, and I don't even mean that. I don't mean price. I mean like time. Like it's not even that. It's like time. Like, is it like 3 months? Is it 6 months? Is it a year? Like how long? Oh, that's what I mean. Like time.
Mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, probably a few months for most of them. Right.
Yeah, so it's like you go through that, and I don't want to say that working with your team is painful. We work with your team. It's not painful. I just mean like there's typically sometimes there's a reason why that cleanup's not been done or why it wasn't done. Mm-hmm. Maybe the entrepreneur doesn't love the number part of things, or maybe they don't like want to look and see what's under the hood. But the point is that like there's like, you know, you go through that pain or whatever that process is for a couple months or so. And then at the end of that, like your control of the business and the decisions that you're able to make. So I'm sorry. Again, I'll let you finish in terms of the time frame, but I just like to let people know there's hope.
Absolutely. I'd say typically if we're talking about, you know, a year to a few years of cleanup, those projects will usually be 3 to 6 months. And that's whether someone like us does it, they have an outside bookkeeper, they have in-house bookkeeper. That's a typical timeline.
Yeah, that's good. You took 3 years, you took X amount of years to get where you're at. Now you're making some money, things are going well, you know, you're thinking about it, you have to make better decisions. Maybe you added a zero or two to your revenue if you're lucky. And now it's like, okay, you can't wing it anymore. You gotta get in there, get it all cleaned up. So you start working on the business, spend that 3 to 6 months, get it all cleaned up, and then you're ready for that next level of growth.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
It's awesome. I want to switch focus here a bit. When I heard about this new the company that you launched with your partners, so Crypto Tax International, like how did this come about?
So we've been in the crypto space, pretty active in it since 2017. Right when I opened up the doors to the firm, because right around that time, cryptocurrency was. It's not where it was now, but it is just on the cusp of becoming a little bit more mainstream. Mm-hmm. It started entering more common conversations not just the folks that are, you know, in the dark net areas of virtual currency for the last decade. And so we started getting calls about it, right? About how to report it. What's the tax implications of it? So we did our diligence, got into it pretty deep ourselves. Mm-hmm. Some of us have been trading cryptocurrencies, and fast forward to now, it's become a huge area of expertise for us. Right? And I'd say probably about 20% of all of our new businesses in the crypto space.
Wow. And so what are some of the challenges there? Because you're definitely cutting edge on what you're doing. And I do want to get further into the development and the process. But like, what are some of the challenges that you see in that space right now?
I think just reporting, right? Yeah. Understanding not just the tax implications of virtual currencies, but how to report it. And the reality is that there are no clean mechanisms for reporting. I think about when you're... If you're an employee for an organization, at the end of the year, you receive a W-2, right?
Right.
You take the W-2 in your taxes. Super easy, right? There's a system for it. There's a document for it. That's it. Same thing. If you trade on Schwab, ING, Fidelity, whoever, you get a 1099-B, right? You take that tax document, or your CPA does, and then prepare your tax returns. Again, super simplified, very straightforward. Cryptocurrency, there is no system like that. Yeah. Every crypto exchange either has some reporting or doesn't. And even the ones that do, half the time it's inaccurate, right? Because they don't really know how to report it, or they haven't been pushed enough by regulatory bodies to ensure that they're being compliant with their own reporting. So every taxpayer is really just kind of left to their own devices. And the expectation from the IRS and state taxing authorities is that it's your obligation, whether you know how to do it or not, to accurately report everything. And if you don't, we're going to come get you. Yeah. And that became an opportunity for us, because we understand the tax implications of it, and we understand the gaps in the markets right now.
And when I think about this, and I think about the progress that's made, I don't know if I'm quoting the right time period here, but let's just say in the 70s, maybe it might have been a little bit more or a little bit earlier. So maybe, well, I think it might have been the 70s. So if we think about like whether it's the commodities markets, or you know, the idea of day trading or things coming online where you could be more active in the stock market, and let's just say even with lesser dollar amounts, it was no longer just an opportunity for the wealthy that had. This is before, I think this is even before the term financial planning was coined, but where financial planning was your team, right? You had your lawyer, you had your tax advisor, you had like this whole team, and they made sure that all your reporting and everything was done correctly, especially if you were an active trader or actively trading. It wasn't some of the softwares and the systems, the big brokerages didn't have it figured out like they do now. So I see kind of a similarity to like what's going on in crypto now. It's kind of like we're going back to the 70s or maybe even earlier in that space. And what you're doing and what your team and the vision is really you're helping people catch up to where we're at right now. And on the stock side of things, that nice clean, you know, 1099 that they'll get from a Schwab or a Vanguard. So your concept is you're helping people catch up, because that reporting, and I'll let you speak on this, of course, way more than myself, but it's my understanding that that's not going anywhere. So when everything does catch up, like there's going to be, you know, the onus is still going to be on the taxpayer like it is now, right? Like it's like you need to be accurate. And if you're not, then for some, that might be like a ticking time bomb. Like that's not going to go away.
It really is. Yeah. This is the whole space it's not going away. If anything, it's going to only get increase in scrutiny, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at the IRS and the press releases and news out there, and they're hiring thousands of new auditors, and mostly is attributable to this space.
Yeah.
Right. There's the notices, audits, and examination letters people are getting hit with now is only going to get a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Right? For those that are compliant, you know, if you do receive a notice, examination letter, it's nothing to fret about because it's documented and we can make it go away relatively easily. So the first step is to make sure that everything is being captured and reported properly.
Before we get into maybe the other side of how this is accomplished, like what's a myth or two that you've heard? Like some things that you hear out there where we're like, that's a misunderstanding. Like that's just not accurate. Like what's a myth or two you've heard going around about the reporting side of this or how it works?
Sure. One of the first ones in the crypto space was that if you're trading a coin for a coin or token for token, that you don't have to pay tax on it. You don't have to pay tax until you cash out. Because otherwise, the thought was you're just doing a 1031 exchange. I'm not going to make this a complicated tax session, right? But in real estate, you could have a property, sell it, take the gains, and buy a different property. You don't have to pay tax on the gains because you're rolling it to the new thing.
Yeah.
People thought you could do a similar 1031 for cryptos. Mm-hmm. You can't, right? But that myth existed for quite some time, even though now the IRS made it abundantly clear that is not permitted. Some people still make that argument.
Wow. And that would be let's stick with that one a little bit. So that would be like for, you know, the investors out there, that'd be like thinking that you're going to, for just to relate it back to maybe what they might understand stock, that'd be like saying, okay, you're making, you know, a trade in your 401k from one to another, and that's a sheltered account, right? So depending, and so now you don't owe taxes, but you're doing these active trades in your regular brokerage account, and you're thinking that if you got some wins in there, you don't have to pay taxes. That's a big misunderstanding. That's a big one. Any others?
Yeah, it was. And there's some situations we had clients where the amount of gain that they owed ended up being more than the value of their entire portfolio because the market, you know,
it still fluctuates, right?
Because it fluctuates. Yeah. And they had no idea that, that they had, you know, 60,000 taxable events, right? But it happened. Wow. Another common myth in this space is related to staking or rewards. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a coin and you essentially put it up in a locked-in state so that you're saying, you know, it's mine, but this other platform is going to use it and I'm going to get rewards. Think of it almost like interest. The myth there is that those rewards or that interest in the form of crypto is not taxable unless you actually claim it, right? Or cash it out, right? Just like the other myth is, you know, if you earn it, even if you don't transfer it to fiat, didn't transfer it to your bank account, cash it out, it's still all taxable.
Yeah. On that last one, that would be kind of like the gifting thing, right? Like if you receive a gift of dollar value, if I'm just trying to think of like kind of a similarity that people may know about, like if you receive a taxable gift, right? Like, well, it's a gift. You receive this car, whatever. Oprah gives you a car, right? Mm-hmm. Or if they don't pay the taxes on it, like that's a sizable gift. Like you might still owe something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh man, these are good ones. I knew we were going to get into some myth busters today, and let's get to the hope side. So like there is obviously crypto's not going anywhere. And it's a space that for some, it may make sense to invest in, of course, based on their own personal situation. So it's not saying that we're saying that like you don't have to invest it or making any judgment on the currency as a viable investment or not. But the idea here, though, is that if you do choose to invest and go that route or, you know, put a portion of your portfolio in it, like there's hope on the other side. So let's get to the hope. Like, tell us a little bit more about your vision and what it looks like to work with your new company.
Sure. Before I touch on that and touch on what the semi-hope that currently exists, right? Mm-hmm. So with all the influx and crypto activity, and now we have staking, now we have NFTs, and it's only blossom from here, right? Five years from now, we're going to be probably a dozen other crypto-related things that we didn't know about.
I don't have to pay taxes, Jeff. I made that money in the metaverse. That's a different world. No, I'm sorry. We're not going to go on that one right now. Please. I had to throw it out there, Jeff. Yeah. Go ahead, please.
No, but joking aside, you're probably not that far off. It's going to happen.
No, that's going to be a myth on our next, and when we do our next interview in 6 months or a year, it's going to be like, you have to pay taxes in the metaverse, and no, it's not a metaverse IRS agent. They will come knock at your door.
But any tax you pay in the metaverse and you get a credit here in reality.
Like a foreign tax. This is good, Jeff. You know, you don't disappoint. Go
ahead. There is some hope in that currently that because crypto's been around, it's not going away. There are some software platforms out there in the cloud or cloud-based ones, websites, where people could link their APIs for whatever platforms they're using to trade so that they'll calculate the gains and losses so they can report on their taxes. Yeah. The issue with many of those, not all of them, is that they tend to fall apart when it comes to transferring between different wallets, transferring different between different platforms, doing trades off-chain, doing DeFi stuff. And that's what kind of led us to what we're doing with CryptoTax International, right? Is we see this gap, right? And every one of these software platforms on the web now, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to disparage them, but you can easily Google them, is that they're all built by developers backed by investors. There's a reason why in the fine print at the very bottom it says, this is not tax advice, don't rely upon this, seek out a tax attorney or CPA, right? Because they know they can't give tax advice. And they know that there's issues with these softwares. At CryptoTax International, we're building the first and only software for calculating crypto taxes. It's actually backed by accountants, backed by CPAs, backed by forensic tax experts that have firsthand experiencing defending people in audits involving cryptocurrency.
Yeah. And that, okay, to me, that's just logical. That makes sense. Like if you're thinking about the tax software that you're using for this, like you would, that's who you'd want the platform to be built by, right? Like that's what you'd want. And especially because things are changing fast. Like as new regulations, as new rulings, as new things come out, like you want your platform to continue to evolve and to continue to be accurate, right?
Right. Yeah. And you want it to be, again, be monitored by folks that actually live and work in this space, not just here's a software, here's a printout you can use to prepare taxes. And then all of a sudden, let's say someone they're audited, they're like, they go back to the platform like, hey, I need help defending this. And they're like, oh, well, that's not on us. We're just a software. Right? Yeah. What we're doing is building something that can be relied upon and that you would have interaction or ability to interact with folks that can actually take it to the next level and help defend.
That's great. I mean, I think it's exciting. I think it's an exciting project and definitely really forward thinking because there's a need. There's a need. Some of those myths that you said, I know, you know, we were kind of joking a little bit, but they're real things. Like not like misinformation is the, I guess is what I'd say. And just the idea of who you get your advice from on these type of things is going to, just as an entrepreneur in general, but specifically in this space as well, like it can definitely cost you more down the line for maybe working off the wrong playbook or getting the wrong advice. Like if you're getting your advice on this space from a forum or from, you know, maybe some others, that's kind of how, you know, the space maybe has operated a little bit in the past. But as the space matures, as more professionals like yourself, Jeff, come into the fold that have this type of experience and on a higher level in many different areas, I feel like it's good for the industry as a whole because it's going to mature. Like it's going to mature. And this is the process of bringing that type of investment more, in my opinion as well, mainstream, so that it's more mainstream, it's more acceptable, and that more can benefit from the opportunity should they choose to.
Exactly. Yep. That's the plan.
Yeah. Another thing that's going on here. So I know also I can't, podcaster to podcaster, Forensic Filings Podcast. So I know that's coming up as well, for yourself and the firm. So I'm happy to work and help produce that show for you. So what's the concept and the idea behind this? Because I'm excited. I mean, I think it's going to be a big value add, not just to the Mission Matters community, who we're of course going to distribute it to, but just to all entrepreneurs out there. I mean, tell us a little bit more about your idea and vision for the show.
Sure. Yeah. So as I mentioned kind of at the beginning, a lot of my background is in forensic accounting. You know, the better part of first 20 years or so of my career was really dedicated or highly focused on forensic matters. Right. So for those not familiar with it, what forensic accounting really is, it's a lot of people think of CSI as the word forensic.
Yeah.
But instead of bodies and blood, it's documents and numbers. Really the same thing. We're just dealing with different stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So during my tenure, even through today, you know, I've worked on a lot of interesting matters. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these cases, probably half of them were completely avoidable. Yeah. Had people had a little bit better insight about their numbers and about their internal controls and how they run their business, or how they engage in business with others. Right. So the show, the point of the podcast would be partly to share insights from a forensic perspective on common business things, right? Ranging from bookkeeping to managing people to looking at their cash flows, you know, having that forensic perspective on those things. And part of it's going to be some war stories, right? I've worked on hundreds and hundreds of cases over the years, and I hear stories from colleagues of mine in the industry too. So there's always interesting things that we could share, right, and relate to.
Yeah, it's great. And then in addition to that, one of your colleagues, so Avi, I know, also has a book coming out as well, and that's going to be in the crypto space, and it's called Unlocking the Decentralized. So a lot going on, man. I mean, tell me a little bit more about the idea and the concept behind the book launch. I mean, we're gonna talk to Avi about it as well, but I got to give him a shout out here. Like, tell us a little bit more about that.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, so Avi's phenomenal. He's actually one of my former MBA students from several years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I hired him on. He started off as just a part-timer intern, and fast forward now, he is like the cream of the crop when it comes to crypto expertise. Mm. He's done such a phenomenal step in not just defining himself and his brand in that space, but he's gone down the rabbit hole further than I ever have.
Yeah.
Further than I think most people in the crypto space have as accountants. So in conjunction as being one of my partners in Crypto Tax International, he has that book coming out on the crypto space. Yeah. And then he also has a cryptocurrency related podcast that just started up too.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And we're going to bring Avi on the show, of course, and definitely give some love to the podcast. Love supporting other podcasters and authors out there and really getting their individuals that are working hard to get, you know, their message out there. We love supporting them. Well, Jeff, I'm just got to say it's been, you know, great having you back on the show today and working with you again. I just have to ask, what's next? I mean, you got a lot on the plate. What's next?
So next up is we're spending a little more time on the crypto tax project. As you know, it's an ICO. So for those not familiar, an ICO is kind of like an IPO, but with a virtual coin. So what we're doing is we'll be releasing a virtual coin, and the funds derived from that are going to further help streamline the software development stuff on the back end. And depending on how much is raised, will dictate where we're listed. I mean, we'd love to be listed on Coinbase, but you know, we'll wait and see.
Fantastic. Well, Jeff, if somebody wants to, you know, follow up to learn more about Neumeister and Associates, obviously your crypto project, or just, you know, follow the journey in general. I mean, what's the best way for individuals to connect with your team?
Well, easiest thing is probably go to our website, because that has all of our contact information, including mine. That's NeumeisterCPA.com. And then for Crypto Tax International, it's cryptotax.co.in. Mm-hmm. Both of those sites you'll be able to find are all of our contact information, my email and whatnot.
Mm. Perfect. And we'll put all that information in the show notes so that our audience can just click on it and head right on over and check out your projects. And of course, Neumeister and Associates. Speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or connecting with our platform, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their expertise, how they do what they do, and to give us tips. And more importantly, also talk about why they do what they do, like the mission behind it, how they're out there in the marketplace trying to make a difference in the world. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting or engaging or fun to you, then we highly recommend hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based entrepreneurs just like Jeff coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Jeff, wishing you much more continued success, and we're going to definitely bring you back on the show as we get closer to this ICO for sure. Thanks for coming back on.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam.